This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Everywhere you turn right now, there's a lot of baseball going on, and I can't get enough of it. Hello again, welcome back to another edition of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. We are up to episode 36 of the Extra Bases Podcast, and we got a lot to talk about. It feels like it has been a while since I've talked to you guys on an Extra Bases Podcast, between my travels to New York City covering the NIT and things like that. Now basketball season is fully, well, for the most part, fully in the rearview mirror as it relates to college basketball. So if you're a Hoops fan, get over to the Drop and Dives Podcast and check those out. But it has been some time since I've talked to y'all on the Extra Bases Podcast, and there is a lot to cover with the Longhorns, who are heading into a Big 12 series this weekend at home against Kansas State. We'll talk about that from a preview perspective, not necessarily about Kansas State, because I think that this series, like a lot of series in the Big 12, but especially series in the Big 12 against the Kansas schools, is about Texas more so than it is about the opponent. But we'll go back to Tuesday's game against Rice, and Texas handled its business against Rice, a Rice program that's really struggling right now. I believe they're like 14-23 or 14-21 or something like that. It's not a good record. My dog just woke up from his nap on the couch and is making some noise. sorry, he cracks me up. It's like clockwork. Certain parts of the day, he gets on one of his favorite chairs, and then he just rises when he starts hearing a voice and starts like, okay, it's time for you to take me outside. So hold on, Willie, I'll get to you in a little bit. But Texas handled its business this Tuesday against Rice. And we'll start with what was by far the biggest story to me, even bigger than the actual result of the game. Sure, it was good for Texas to get a win for their resume and confidence and momentum and all those things on and on. Ty Madden got to start in that game. As you longtime listeners of the Extra Bases Podcast know, I've spent a lot of time talking about Ty Madden. I'm very, very high on this freshman. And there was a point a few weeks ago where he had some shoulder discomfort, dead arm, whatever you want to call it. Came out of a game early, and it was like, uh-oh. At first, maybe it was the elbow. It wasn't the elbow. Deep sigh of relief. Then it was the shoulder. And sometimes the shoulder things can really linger. And if anybody that's played or you haven't played, dead arm, it's hard to explain because there's like no rhyme or reason to it. And sometimes it can linger a long time. Sometimes it comes back right away with shoulder discomfort. Sometimes there's not really pain, but something feels off, and the shoulder is really hard to figure out. So there was some concern, at least from me, because when I see a young pitcher like Madden, whose velocity disappeared, and it's a shoulder issue, kind of the sirens start going off in my head, like, okay, something is up here. So Texas wisely basically just rested him for a while, and then started easing him back into it. And Tuesday night against Rice, he gets to start, and he comes out right away. He's 89-92, and I'm thinking, okay, this is more like the Ty Madden that I saw at the beginning of the season, where he had the velocity without really reaching back for it. And then as he got into the later innings of his outing, it was a short outing by design. I mean, he wasn't going to throw five or six innings, at least I don't think. But when he was in the second and third innings, he starts to touch 94 multiple times. And I think that that is just a terrific sign for him, a terrific sign for Texas, that his velocity has returned. I mean, but before the shoulder issue and even the immediate outings after the shoulder issue, he was like an 86-89 pitcher. And again, this is a guy that touched 98 miles an hour in the fall. This is a guy, when I saw him in high school, that was basically 91-95 the entire outing into the sixth inning of his start, deep into his season. I believe that was in May when I saw him pitch. So this is a guy that I think eventually, after at least one full year in a college strength and conditioning program, because he's got so much untapped strength, and especially like functional strength with his body, it's so untapped. It's by far the most untapped physical projection for any pitcher on that team. So his body is going to look way different by the time he's a junior in college, and also just his understanding and his strength levels are going to really, really improve as well. So that's why I think that he's going to flirt with throwing 100 miles an hour by the time he leaves here. And, of course, I'm sure some of you heard that when that was probably like 10 or 15 podcasts ago. And are watching him throw 88 thinking, what the hell is this guy talking about? Like, I swear to you, I've seen this guy in high school touch 95, or maybe it was 96. And then in the fall, I saw him literally with my radar gun touch 98 miles an hour. So there's big time velocity in there. And we started to see that again against Rice. He reached back for 94 miles an hour when he wanted to, but he sat 89 to 92 miles an hour. And he sat at that velocity with the intent of commanding the pitch. I have no doubt in my mind if he wanted to throw 94, 95 all game and rear back and let it go, he could have done it based on the way that he was getting to 94 when he wanted to and how he wasn't putting a ton of effort into 89 and 92. So a really positive sign for him and Texas. And also, too, his breaking ball is interesting in that, like, sometimes it kind of looks like a slurve. Sometimes it kind of looks like a slider. Sometimes it kind of looks like a curveball. And it's all kind of in this 79 to 84 mile an hour range as he's really trying to understand the feel for the pitch and things like that. But it generated a lot of swings and misses. And this was a Rice lineup that at the top was pretty good. Definitely some guys that could put some barrels on the ball and drive it. Mainly Trey Cruz, who hit a rocket to left field at the left fielder his first at bat. And then his second at bat, he nearly took Madden out to the deepest part of the park and deep right center field. Duke Ellis caught it literally standing beside the wall. Well, I think that's like 405 way out there, and he just got a little too under it, but obviously crushed it. So they had some guys at the top of their lineup that were no joke. The bottom of the lineup was weak, but the top of the lineup had some players. So this was not some easy chore. This was not, you know, UT Rio Grande Valley or something like that that he was facing. It was a pretty solid lineup at the top. So I think that that's a very, very encouraging sign for Texas, is that his velocity was back to what it was in the early part of the season. And I don't think he's ever going to be at the point this year where he's going to be touching 98 miles an hour again like he did in the fall, because he showed up in the fall and was just throwing hard. He wasn't really pitching as much as he was throwing. And right now, he's trying to become more of a pitcher, you know, move the fastball up and down, in and out, command the breaking ball and things like that. So, but a big positive for Texas that his velocity returned. Another positive for Texas, I think, is that going back to, you know, if you remember that Xavier series, and it's something I talked about and I wrote about at orangebloods.com, Texas swept that series, but there was like very little separation between the two teams. And Xavier did have some talent. I remember looking up and down at their positional players, mainly their shortstop, first baseman, and left fielder. And I was like, these guys got some talent. These guys are going to be drafted somewhere, I think. And they had some pitchers, mainly, man, his name escapes me, that the Sunday guy was up to 97 miles an hour and had reportedly touched 100 earlier that year. So he's obviously got some talent as well. But there was little separation between Texas and Xavier. And I just, as I was watching that whole series unfold, I kept thinking to myself, this Texas team isn't really getting better. It's not getting worse, but it isn't getting better. It was like its improvement was stalled, and it just kind of was stuck in the mud. It just wasn't really going in reverse, wasn't really going forward. It was just kind of the same team that we had seen for a while. So, I mean, the positive thing for Texas is that it's been able to generate results at a pretty high rate against a really, really tough schedule. But this is a point in the season when you've got to start seeing some improvement. And I think that that's what we're starting to see over the last week. And I know Texas lost that midweek game to Texas A&M. But even going back to that midweek game, which, I mean, if the Texas pitchers don't throw strikes and they don't play defense very well, I mean, that's going to hurt them. Although I think they're getting a little bit better in that regard as well. But going back to the Texas A&M game, and since then, Texas has started to drive the baseball more as an offense. You're starting to see more extra base hits. You're starting to see more aggressiveness in the batter's box. You're starting to see more confidence. You're starting to see more swings with the intent of driving the baseball in counts when there's an opportunity to try to drive the baseball. I mean, you're not seeing guys swing out of their shoes in 1-2, 0-2 or something like that. But you are seeing guys early in counts start to take some really aggressive hacks. And the extra base hits have increased. Going back to that A&M game, they had extra base hits in that game. And then the Baylor series, although it was shortened, you started to see some guys really drive the ball more. And Baylor robbed Texas, I think, at least three, four, maybe even five times in the outfield of extra base hits with some really good defensive plays. That Baylor defense is one of the better defenses in the country, I think.
So the Texas lineup definitely swung the bat better, I think, than the Baylor series showed. And speaking of the Baylor series, we'll get back to that. Just two games, and I'm sure it had to be maddening for David Pearson in that team because they get up 6-0 in the third game on Sunday, the rubber match of the series, after a heartbreaking loss on Friday, come back and win that game on Saturday. And they're up 6-0, and the rain just will not stop. They waited and waited and waited and waited and waited some more, and the rain just would not stop. So they ended up just having to cancel that game. So that's a tough break for them there, because I really think that they would have ended up winning that series against a Baylor team that right now is on top of the Big 12 standings. We'll get into the Big 12 standings here in a little bit before we wrap up the podcast. But just going back to the offense, I think that this is a really positive sign. You're starting to see guys, you know, Austin Todd, how much have I talked about pulling the ball with authority? He, after getting robbed of what might have been a homer, but definitely an extra base hit early in the game on Saturday, he hammers a two-run homer out to left, pulling the baseball. He's getting back to pulling the ball with authority. Against Rice, he just missed a homer down the left field line by about 10 or 15 feet that he pulled a little bit foul, definitely had the distance. So we're starting to see him really hit the ball with authority to all fields. He's starting to barrel the ball more consistently. I think you're seeing that from Mason Hibler. I think you're seeing that some from Duke Ellis, who's generated more extra base hits. Lance Ford, by the way, probably the most consistent at-bats on the team right now. He's consistently getting the barrel to the ball, is putting the ball in play at a high level, and you're starting to see him increase his aggressiveness as well. And I really like when I see from a young hitter, you know, his first at-bat against Rice, he had an opportunity to drive a run home and got too aggressive and ended up striking out swinging. Next time he comes up to the plate, it just, you see an adjustment. You see a little bit of a more controlled approach, not selling out just for contact, but understanding, okay, last time I got a little too big. I got a little too long with my swing. I got a little bit too aggressive. I've got to make an adjustment here and get back to putting the ball in play hard. And that's what he did. He ended up having a couple of hits later in that game. So you're still not seeing it a lot from Zach Zubia. They've got to figure out a way to get him going. I thought that he would be such a big power presence in the middle of that lineup this year, and it just hasn't quite happened yet. Michael McCann has been in a real funk offensively, although I know he had the home run against Texas A&M in the midweek game. Tate Shaw has actually been swinging the bat better than his numbers indicate. He still has a lot of issues against left-handers, but he is swinging the bat better of late. So you are seeing it with some guys, mainly Ellis, Todd, Hibler, Ford, maybe to a lesser extent Shaw, that these guys are getting more confident. They are getting more aggressive. You're starting to see the ball jump off the bat a little bit more. And that's probably the main thing I'll be watching this weekend against Kansas State, is how many extra base hits does this team generate? Because they're going to face a Kansas State staff that doesn't have overpowering power arms like they're used to seeing from, you know, the likes of you know, Baylor and TCU and LSU and Texas Tech and Stanford. This is more of a pitchability staff, more of a staff that's going to probably challenge these Texas hitters by throwing backwards and things of that nature. So, what's the pitch selection look like? Which this season's been pretty good. You know, when opposing teams have gone on the mound and tried to walk Texas, Texas has been pretty content to take those walks. And you know, if you're not going to throw strikes, you know, this Texas lineup is going to make you pay for it by getting on base with the walk. So the pitch selection has been good for the most part, but really just gets down to when these guys are making contact, they can't be just a singles lineup. There's not enough talent throughout the lineup to where you've got a bunch of guys that are going to get up there and hit the ball hard every single time. So when there are opportunities to have those extra base hits or get those mistake pitches or to create a big inning and capitalize on some mistakes, I want to see this Texas offense drive the ball more. And that's what it's been doing the last week, is really putting the barrel on the baseball more, hitting more extra base hits, and starting to try to generate more of those bigger innings. If we could go back to the Baylor series, Texas would have likely scored a ton of runs in that series had the Sunday game not been canceled after Texas got up 6-0 in that second inning. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. We are up to episode 36 of the Extra Bases Podcast. And I mentioned we'd go over the Big 12 standings. Just taking a quick look right now. Baylor, as I said, is on top at 6-2. Behind there is Oklahoma State at 6-3, Texas Tech at 5-4, Oklahoma at 5-4, TCU at 5-4, Texas at 4-4, West Virginia at 4-5, Kansas at 2-7, and Kansas State at 1-5. I'm not terribly surprised by this. I figured that this league would be a good league. It hasn't turned into quite the, I don't want to say elite league. I just don't see as many, you know, College World Series big time contenders as I thought I would, or at least teams that you looked at and say, you know what, this team could really play its way into the College World Series. And there's still a lot of time. I mean, it's April 11th. There's still, you know, about a month and a half of the regular season still remaining, and we'll see how it plays out. But from a standing standpoint, I'm not really surprised at this by at all. I figured that there's just going to be this cluster throughout the entire season of all these teams that are close together, because it's a good league. You look at even somebody like West Virginia, who's 4-5 in the league, barely out of first place, has one of the premier arms in the country on Friday, has a really good RPI rating, and is 20-12 overall this season. So really, I think that there's, you look at those first teams, Baylor, Oklahoma State, Tech, Oklahoma, TCU, Texas, West Virginia, and then there's a definite gap between that group and the two teams behind them, which is Kansas and Kansas State. So it's never easy to sweep anyone in the Big 12. The moment you take a team for granted in the Big 12, it's going to beat you. I mean, it happens every single year. How often have we always seen Texas kind of struggle with the Kansas schools when it comes to baseball? Although Kansas has been getting some really impressive pitching talent of late. They've usually got a guy every year that's you know, pretty big time draft prospect, and this year is no different. But there is a definite gap, I think, between the Big 12 and then those two teams at the bottom, Kansas and Kansas State. So you're thinking, okay, Texas has got to sweep this series. Well, that's way easier said than done. I think the goal for every team in the Big 12 is to win the series, and then if you get an opportunity to sweep on Sunday, you try to capitalize on that opportunity as best you can. But you know, a series win for Texas would get it back on track, would get it up to 6 wins in the league, 6-5 in the league. That one Baylor game that was canceled, I hope it doesn't bite either of those teams in the butt in terms of the standings, because who knows? Baylor could have came back and won that game as well. I mean, the way we've seen Texas pitch at times and play defense this year, it's not like Baylor was completely out of the game in the second inning. But if you're looking at a Texas team that was 5-4 instead of 4-4, it basically would have been 5-4 with Texas Tech, Oklahoma, and TCU as well, kind of in that second tier in the standings. So hopefully it doesn't come back to bite Texas as much as it waited out that game and tried to get it in. But this is the Big 12 to me now, and I think it's going to be the Big 12 to me throughout the season, is that you're going to have this cluster of those main teams, and then you're going to have Kansas and Kansas State behind those teams. And it really comes down to, can you handle your business at home and also against those quote-unquote inferior opponents? Can you win those series? Can you hold serve at home and win those series? And can you avoid being swept? And if you can do those things, you're going to put yourself in a position to potentially compete for a Big 12 title like Texas did last year. And I think the good thing for Texas is it's already played Baylor, it's already played Tech, it's already played TCU. So if you look at the schedule, those are three of the best teams in the Big 12. I would say that they are the three best teams in the Big 12 along with Texas. I know Oklahoma State is at 6-3. I'm not really buying them as much as I am Baylor, Texas Tech, and TCU. In Oklahoma, I mean, Skip Johnson's doing a good job with that group. They're going to pitch. You know, they're probably going to play well, but I do think that they're with Oklahoma State kind of below that tier of those first three teams. So Texas, I mean, has basically played, I would say, the toughest schedule of anybody in the Big 12 so far. So there are going to be some opportunities for Texas beginning this weekend to handle its business, win home series, win series against teams that they should beat. And really, for me, it continues to get all back to, are they going to play defense? Are they going to make the makeable plays or the routine plays at a high enough rate to maximize that pitching talent, because we know that there's going to be times when those pitchers do struggle to throw strikes. It's been an issue all season. It's probably going to be an issue at times as the season progresses, although I think that you're going to see some improvement over time with that, like you saw last season, mainly late in the season when Texas just became a much better pitching staff. So there are going to be some strike throwing issues at times. That's why the defense is so important, because this lineup, I don't foresee them putting up huge run totals all the time, especially against quality pitching staffs. They're going to really, really compete. They're going to make you throw strikes. They're going to be aggressive on the bases. They're going to try to hit and run and steal bags and put the bunt down and all those things. But it's just not a top to bottom, very, very dangerous lineup from a talent perspective. So it really, to me, gets back to the defense. Can Texas play defense at the level it's capable of playing consistently and help out that defense? Help out that offense and really maximize what they have with that pitching staff in terms of the talent. Because this pitching staff has missed bats pretty well all season. They generate strikeouts pretty well, both in the starting pitching and the bullpen, especially if Coy Cobb continues to come on like he did against Xavier, and then he was off to a pretty good start against Baylor, although it was a very, very, very short sample size that game. But the starting pitching is doing its job. The bullpen is missing bats. When it throws strikes, it's really, really good. It really just gets back to, for me, that defense and how Texas can play defense. If it plays defense consistently at just an above-average rate, I think it's at the end of the season, it's going to have a chance to win a Big 12 championship. If it doesn't play defense consistently, I think that that's going to be the difference between, you know, finishing first or second in the Big 12 and maybe third or fourth, which could be the difference between hosting a regional in the NCAA postseason, or, you know, having to potentially go on the road somewhere and play somewhere to open a regional. Because Texas right now has a good RPI, has a really good strength of schedule, and it's already got some big-time RPI wins. And it's going to have some opportunities coming up, too, against teams like West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State, solid RPI teams. It's going to have more of an opportunity to generate some more RPI wins and really keep that strength of schedule in a good position. So a lot of things working in Texas' favor as it relates to hosting a regional really just comes down to they control where they're going to play in the postseason. If they play defense well, they throw strikes, and they just remain competitive and get a little bit better offensively and generating extra base hits, they're probably going to host a regional. And if they don't do those things, I think the Big 12 is tough enough to where they could send them on the road as a 2-seed in the NCAA tournament. This is episode 36 of the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com, going through the Longhorns right now, looking ahead to this weekend series against Kansas State, kind of recapping the last week, week plus of Texas baseball. Some really encouraging signs, I think, for Texas after a period of just lack of improvement. It was kind of just a stagnant team for about a week and a half, and you're starting to see some signs of life and improvement again. So we'll wrap up with a little discussion about this third paid assistant thing with college baseball, which is kind of become a very, very popular topic all of a sudden. And credit Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com for reporting on this. Kendall, a very, very good friend of mine, does awesome work there. If you're a college baseball fan and you don't subscribe to D1 Baseball, you need to change that. Those guys do a better job than anybody does covering college baseball from a national perspective. Man, it would help if I could say those words, since I do actually have a podcast where I'm supposed to talk and deliver a message. So Kendall reported basically the Big 12 voted no on the third full-time paid assistant. And Chris Del Conte, the Texas Athletics Director, was actually quoted in that story about his explanation for why he voted no and things like that. I'm trying to figure out how to do a long story short thing with this. So the third full-time paid assistant, for those of you that are unaware, we'll look at the Texas coaching staff. You have the head coach, you have Sean Allen, and you have Philip Miller. Those Sean Allen and Philip Miller are paid full-time assistants. They are full go on the staff. They can go recruit, salary, benefits, all of those things. Phil Haig, who works with the pitchers, is a volunteer coach. Now, I know you hear the words volunteer and you're thinking, wait a minute, this guy he does this for free? No. That's not how it works. Programs like Texas are able to
keep a very quality coach like Haig in a position like this because they generate so much money from camps during the winter, during the summer, during the year. It's one of the reasons why Texas has turf on its field is because they can host these camps all the time and it doesn't destroy the field. So you generate this money from camps and then you're able to help pay a guy like Haig and keep him around. So he can't go on the road recruiting. He is a volunteer coach. You know, he coaches a team fully and he's at every practice and every game, obviously, and does bullpens and all those things, but he's not a full-time coach. So there's been a lot of discussion over recent years, and it's finally come to a vote about this third paid assistant where I guess conferences were going to be able to vote on whether they should pass legislation to allow programs the opportunity to hire a third full-time coach. And I say opportunity because a lot of these conferences and programs that are voting yes on this right now will not be able to afford this. I think that they are voting yes because they would like the option to afford it if there was a time when they were able to do that. So you wouldn't be mandated to have a third full-time paid assistant coach. You just have the option to do that because, let's be honest, as much as I love college baseball, as much as I think it's growing, it's starting to get more TV exposure, it's starting to get more big-time high school players picking it over professional baseball, it's still not a what we would call a revenue sport. There's not many programs nationally that turn a revenue with college baseball. It's just the way it is. There's just not that huge TV money and things like that because a lot of these teams don't get all of their games televised. I think Texas fans are spoiled by LHN, and obviously the SEC gets a lot of its games televised on the SEC network and things like that. But like when Stanford played UCLA, the number one, number two teams in the country, you couldn't find it on television. Like, so college baseball still has a ways to go as it relates to the television exposure and the money and all those things. So it's not really a revenue sport. So it's got to be a struggle for some of these athletic departments and at these lesser conferences and lesser programs where it's like, yeah, we'd love to have the option to hire a third full-time coach. We can't afford it right now because this sport's not really turning that revenue for us, and maybe we don't have this big football program that's generating all this money and so on and so forth. So I think that you're seeing some of these conferences vote no. And I think what's happened is, and I'm also basing some of this off of, you know, the discussion we had with David Pierce today. The media meets with David Pierce before every series to kind of preview. And I asked him specifically about Del Conte's vote no and the Big 12's vote no and just kind of the future of this rule. And I'm with him from the standpoint of I think that this has turned into a very it's turned into a more complicated matter than it should. And really, and he made a good point about this, really initially when this discussion first began, it wasn't necessarily turning a volunteer coach into a paid coach. It was adding another coach to the staff. Because if you look at the ratio of baseball coaches to student athletes, for example, Texas has three full-time coaches for baseball. Obviously, they have a volunteer coach that makes it four. But from a full-time salary standpoint, they have three. Head coach and then two assistants. They have during the season, it's more players in the fall and the offseason. They have 35 players. Think about that for a second. Think about how many football coaches there are. Okay, maybe that's a poor example because football generates a ton of money. But basketball has a head coach and three full-time assistants for 13 scholarship players. Now look at baseball. It's three for 35. That's the biggest ratio difference of any sport in college, or at least at Texas, between amount of coaches per student athlete. So these coaches really just wanted another coach. They wanted to have another coach to where, okay, I can have three full-time paid assistants, and maybe I have a graduate assistant or a volunteer coach or, you know, something else, somebody else on staff that can help coach and just isn't on the road recruiting and those sorts of things. So It from there, it's kind of turned into a lot of unnecessary baggage, I think. Chris Del Conte talked about his hang-up was the softball inclusion. So basically because of Title IX, I think that because if you allowed baseball to have another full-time coach, that would have to be redistributed some way to women's athletics. Well, somewhere along the way, this proposal got attached to softball. Like, basically, if it passes, well, then you've got to add a softball coach as well, which to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because I think if you ask a bunch of softball coaches, they would be like, we don't really need another coach. Like, it'd be nice to just have the money or things like that, but it's not like we need another coach. So it's kind of, and this is a phrase that NBA people use a lot with contracts when they're signing things like that. It's kind of, the softball inclusion is kind of a poison pill for this thing passing or not, because you're getting some of these athletic directors that are saying that, okay, I think there's one or two things. Some of these athletic directors are either hung up on this softball inclusion, or they're using it as an escape route because they don't want to pay another full-time employee. Because in addition to a full-time salary, you got to also think that, you know, benefits, travel expenses, all of these things. And I'm sure there's just some people that just don't want to pay that, and knowing that they'd have to also redistribute that money somewhere else on the women's side as well. So while I do think some people are hung up on the softball thing being tagged to baseball, I think it's also an escape route as well. But really, this has become way more complicated than it should have been. It should have been just put on the table as baseball as a sport gets to add another full-time coach or another coach so that it can have three full-time assistants and then the option to have a graduate assistant, volunteer coach, whatever, to have four assistants. Because this, you're already working with 11.7 scholarships. And now, like, you've got this sport that's becoming more visible and is increasing in popularity, I think. And you've only got three full-time coaches to manage a 35-guy roster. And in the fall, it's like, you know, 45 or something like that. It just, they need to have another coach. But through this whole process and the way it's been proposed and the way it was designed and things like that, I think it's helped derail that. So follow Kendall Rogers on Twitter. I know he's reporting about it. I'm not sure if it's going to pass or not. I just don't know too much about the voting. From talking to Kendall, it sounded like the Big 12 vote was like, okay, this might put an end to it possibly passing. But there's been a lot of other conferences that have recently voted yes. So maybe this thing actually does have some life. But I know, you know, based on my conversation with Pierce, it sounds like, and this makes sense, it sounds like they would just prefer to have another coach. It's not necessarily having another full-time employee or whatever. It's just having another coach. So we'll see what happens. But I do think for a sport that is growing, a sport that's becoming more visible, a sport that I think in the future, if it becomes better developed, if you've got more instruction, if you've got more of these top players picking college baseball over turning pro right away, I think the visibility of this sport is going to increase. Because you're going to start to see a lot more big-time players in college that you can get your look at your next, you know, first-round pick for your team, the next, you know, Casey Mize or somebody like that that comes out of college and goes to your pro team and is in the big leagues in 2 or 3 years or something like that. So we'll see what happens, but that is the – I guess that was not a long story short kind of thing, because that turned into a very – oh, very long explanation. But with that, we will wrap up episode 36 of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I am Dustin McComas of OrangeButts.com. If you have not done this, and I implore you to do this as a active Yak listener and hopefully subscriber, go download our app. Go to the Apple Store, search for the Yak app. I believe it should come up under Yak. But just search until you find it. It's in there. Trust me, I use it all the time. It's an amazing app. The staff did an amazing job designing that thing. It works great. It's easy. Go get the Yak app and take our podcast content with you wherever you go. And speaking of podcast content, every time I look on there, we're adding another podcast. And we're starting to get very diverse as well in terms of we've got some women-centric podcasts now that are super entertaining. You got, in addition to your football stuff, your basketball stuff, your baseball stuff, some tech stuff, some music stuff. This bad boy is growing, and I'm really excited about it. So I invite you to go explore all the content that the Yak subscription provides you. You should have more podcasts to listen to than you have hours to listen to podcasts. But really, go to the Apple App Store and get the Yak app. I'm telling you, it'll be a game changer for your podcast experience. And also, you can follow me on Twitter at DMCOMASOB on Twitter, DMCCOMASOB on Twitter. Follow me on there. You'll get Major League Baseball, NBA basketball, college basketball, Texas sports, recruiting, fantasy sports, life advice. No, not really much life advice. Food advice. Definitely food advice. Coffee advice. Things like that. Traveling advice. You know, the important things beyond sports as well. So follow me on Twitter. Get to the App Store, download the Yak app, and get to theyak.com and check out all of our great podcast content. Okay, I've given you a lot of homework assignments to do. So with that, let's wrap this bad boy up. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great week. I hope you have a great weekend. If you're taking your dog to the park for the Texas baseball game on Sunday night at Barker in the Park, my ferocious Shih Tzu, who often makes noise on this podcast, he will be there with my wife at Barker in the Park night. Actually day. It's a day game on Sunday. So have fun doing that if you're doing that. But really, just have a great weekend. Enjoy watching some baseball. I hope that your work week went well. I hope that this helped it go by a little bit quicker. And until next time, take care.